comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to The Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this gorgeous planet that we call home. Thanks for being here at The Kevin Smith Show, and a special welcome to all of you who are joining us for the very, very first time. Welcome to talk radio like nowhere else on Earth. I'm here because it matters, and so do you. And here are a couple of other things that matter. Don't forget, if you entered a graphic into our contest that we have, where we're running a contest to select a logo for the Kevi Knights, we lost those in a computer crash. You need to send those to us. Some of you have been sending since last night. I announced it, and but if you had an entry, you need to send us that entry again because. We had a computer crash, and we lost those. Had a hard disk crash. Also remember the Gods in the Garden seminar for Saturday, September the 26th. During chat last time, one of the people that I was chatting with was amazed that the Gods in the Garden seminar was ever done live. When you get the DVD, you're getting the recording of the live seminar that went out over our TV station. Now, what we're going to do is we're going to play that, we're going to air that on Saturday. It's not free. In order to get in, you have to pay $25 for the support of this show. That's the purpose for it. But it gives you an opportunity to see the seminar once again, or to see it for the first time. Don't miss it again if you missed it the first time. I want to read to you an email that I got. Actually, this came as a flash message from Rodolfo in the Philippines. It says, I am thankful to have gotten to find your website. The information you have should be sent out to everyone so they would know about the truth, if there is one. Thank you for this opportunity. Rodolfo, thank you. And we're trying. That's what this is all about. This is going out to the whole world. We have people in 95 countries that are tuned in, watching and listening to this show. They're watching on KSS-TV, and they're listening by a whole bunch of different means. One is by internet radio. Another is by AM radio. Another is FM radio, shortwave radio, and cell phones. So we're trying to get it out there, and we hope you'll help us to keep getting it out there. The way that happens is we get to pay our bills for the month, and then we don't get evicted from the studio. So that's how it happens, and I hope that you will consider helping us. And you might say, well, you know, I don't have much money. I couldn't give more than $2 or $3. Okay, we'll take it. Any amount that you can afford to be without. Okay, so you don't go to Starbucks one morning. But that will help us to continue broadcasting. As we shall tonight, my guest is J.C. Johnson. You know him. You just don't remember that you know him. We'll be back right after this. Thank you. reason I'm laughing is I astound myself at how confused I get at which buttons to push. Oh, thank God it's not a 747. Oh, mercy. J.C. Johnson works along with a team of investigators in the Four Corners area that you've heard me speak about so often here on the show. And one of the team members that works with J.C. is Chief Dan, the Navajo chief who was my guest a few weeks ago. When Chief Dan was a guest on my show, J.C. called in with some additional information. You may remember that. And the additional information that he shared with us was so riveting that I got emails afterward asking me to please get J.C. to come and be our guest on the show. Well, that's what I've done. J.C. is my guest tonight. And J.C., welcome to the Kevin Smith Show.
It's a pleasure to be here, sir. Pleasure.
J.C., you, most of your investigative work, maybe not all of it, but a great portion of it, is up in the Four Corners area and on the Navajo Nation, right?
Yes, where the Four Corners come together, you've got Arizona, Utah, New Mexico, and Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
In the Four Corners, the point there, and that's our area.
Yeah, Arizona, New Mexico, Colorado, and Utah.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Now, you're over on the New Mexico side, right? I mean, you that's where you live.
Where I reside is Farmington, New Mexico. That's my place.
Okay.
I guess where I live, but the areas we investigate are pretty far out there.
All right. Now, when you called in to the show, you shared with us some really, I'd have to say, riveting information, and we'll get into that, but let me sort of go back a little bit and find out a little bit about you. What is your background?
I was guiding out in Arizona on the Mogollon Rim, Page, Lake Powell, different places, years and years ago, up to 20 years ago. And we kept running into strange phenomena, or as I should say, phenomenae. Let's make a new word tonight.
Phenomenae. Okay.
I had always acquainted Sasquatch with Pacific Northwest interest, and we were finding them out here, which I thought no one would ever believe, but there were those who embraced the fact that we found something of that nature out here. So it's a good thing.
Yeah, I think most people, when they think about Sasquatch in the United States, they think about the Pacific Northwest. I think most people would think that there wouldn't be any in the Arizona area because so much of Arizona is desert. But what a lot of people don't realize is that northern Arizona is not a desert.
Northern Arizona is a gorgeous place.
Mm-hmm.
You're aware of this, I'm sure, Kevin, yourself, that vast expanses of northern Arizona are heavily treed and wooded and gorgeous.
Absolutely. And, you know, I have to say this now, and there may be people that would disagree with this, but that's okay. If the Garden of Eden were in the United States, for my money, it would be the Navajo Nation and northwest of there. Absolutely gorgeous.
I'm going to have to agree. I'm going to have to agree with that. Having traveled the country as I have, I've been all over this country investigating Bigfoot sightings and everything else, and some really wonderful, incredible people. I'm going to have to say, if there was a Garden of Eden, it'd be here in the Four Corners.
All right, now, the name of your organization again is Four Corners Paranormal.
No, Crypto Four Corners.
Crypto Four Corners. Okay, now, folks, it's linked.
Google Crypto Four Corners. Eventually, I'm sure you'll run into us and our main website, which is a long spelled out disaster of spelling out. But Google Crypto Four Corners. You'll run into us.
Yeah, are you, folks, you can click the picture of JC that's on my website, and it's linked. Okay, now.
Thank you, sir.
Oh, you're certainly welcome. All right, now, how is it that you got, I understand you were a guide in the wilderness areas of Arizona, and you kept running into these Bigfoot sightings, or reports of them. But how is it that you got into what you're doing now with Chief Dan and with others that are on your team, in investigating all kinds of weird phenomena that is happening, or as you said, phenomenae, that is happening up in that area of the country? How did you get started doing that?
I would start nearly 20 years ago. I married Chief Dan. His stepdaughter, Sandra, I married her, and it was a progression thing. Being in this beautiful area where I was in Arizona, I wanted to get out into it and do things in it, and we started running into these things years ago, many moons, and we couldn't explain what we were experiencing. And early on, I would not accept that there was a Sasquatch here outside of the Patterson-Gimlin film or something of that nature. We give it other names, like at Blue Ridge, we called it the Blue Ridge Banshee. At Blue Ridge, we called it Goat Boy. We called it so many other names. We would not give credence to the fact that Sasquatch was here. We gave it different entities, different anomalies, as you might will. That's what we did.
Okay. All right, so you got started years ago then, sort of looking at all this stuff because of the reports of Sasquatch, but you've run into a lot of stuff that's not Sasquatch.
Well, it's, with Sasquatch, back on the Mogollon Rim in Arizona, that's when it started. Back on the Mogollon Rim years ago, and that's when we started to realize that there was something here.
Yeah, but you've run into a lot of stuff that wasn't Sasquatch as well, that is just really weird.
Yeah. Where do we start? Good Lord.
You know, when we had Chief Dan on, he was talking with us about skinwalkers, and in the course of that, he brought up other types of phenomena that had come up. And when you called in, he had mentioned the reports of living dinosaurs up in the Navajo Nation. And when you called in, you were talking about that. Why don't we jump in right there, and we'll work our way back through skinwalkers and Sasquatch, but let's talk about that because, you know, even when I was in high school, there were reports of living dinosaurs in both South America and Africa. There was a National Geographic team that was over in, I think it was in Africa. And they said that they had photographs, and they were headed back here to the United States, and it all died. You may remember that story. It just all died. It vanished, and nobody ever heard from them. Well, I don't mean the people went missing, but the story went missing. Nobody ever heard the story or saw the pictures.
The reason the story went missing, and I work with unconventional archaeologists, I work with unconventional paleontologists. Those are the people I work with.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason the story went missing is if the Smithsonian says it does not fit into a particular time or place, then they bury it, and they don't recognize it. Now, in modern days, we do not have a full-size T-Rex, as far as I know, roaming the reservation. We've probably got something in the 1,600 to 1,800-pound range roaming the reservation.
Okay, well, now let me ask you about, you said if the Smithsonian says it doesn't fit, then it disappears. What are they, the archaeological and history god?
Yes, they are, sir. That's when we get into philosophical paleontology, we get into philosophical science, we get into philosophical everything else, because they've already got their rules and their ledgers drawn out. And if it doesn't fit into what they say is, then it does not exist.
Mm-hmm. So for them, whatever is not true. It's whatever they say is true.
Exactly. They've got a bottom floor basement full of skeletons in the 9 to 12 foot variety that do not fit in with their existence of mankind. And they'll keep those in the basements. And I've talked to unconventional archaeologists, such as David Hatcher Childress. The dude is awesome. If you guys get to look up anything the way David Hatcher Childress, look it up. Look into what he's talking about. And I think basically, in the end, he's talking about the archaeology at the time of the giants, perhaps the Nephilim. And they were disposed of. And other civilizations come along after these Nephilim are disposed of and take up these sanctuaries. The Inca did not build all of those things in South America. They did not. They did not have the technology.
Well, in fact, I think they, when the Spanish explorers came and asked them, did you build these giant structures? They said, no, they were here when we got here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
All right, now, let's talk. You said there's something in this, maybe the 1,600 to 1,800-pound range that is on the Navajo Nation. Talk to us about that. What do you know about that? What does it look like?
That's the only thing. I'll pursue that because we have evidence of it. We have tracks of it. We have sightings of it. Now, I've got better stories, bigger creatures, but I don't have tracks or evidence of those things, so I'm not going to go there. All I'm going to pursue is what we have tracks and evidence of. And there's something crossing the high desert on a muddy slope that is leaving nearly identical dinosaur footprints in the soil to what we find petrified not far away from there. Nearly identical.
And what describe what the footprint looks like.
The rear foot is like a three-toed print.
Mm-hmm.
And the front print is probably something that's not often introduced to the ground. It's something that would like, okay, I need to get in four-wheel drive and get up this slope.
Mm-hmm.
So the front footprint is more like a mitten.
Mm-hmm.
These appendages probably normally dangle from this creature in an upright position.
So how tall would you suspect this creature would be based on the distance between the footprints and so forth?
I would say around 16 feet.
That's a pretty good sized creature.
Nothing compared to the era of the big ones, believe me. But
mm-hmm.
16 feet would be very shocking and amazing to come upon.
Yeah, for us it would be.
Yes, it would be.
Now, you said there have been sightings of this creature.
Beyond, way beyond. We're like the Lone Rangers out here, with all these things that are going on, and we're looking into everything, you know, and I'm trying not to go too far into the supernatural. I'm looking for flesh and blood.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the flesh and blood that is returning incredibly on our investigations. I have personal eyewitness sightings with me, present, of these creatures.
Okay, now when you say you have personal eyewitness sightings, are you saying that you have personally seen it?
I will tell you the whole story, but we need to answer your question first. I think that's important. We need to answer your question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Let me go to a scenario in a situation. I've got a sheep herder in Newcomb, New Mexico, and he was seeing something, and it was twice the size of his pickup truck, going through this wash and working the area where he was running his sheep. And he said this thing would pick up the sheep and throw its head back like an iguana and swallow them. It wasn't chewing them or eating them or tearing flesh off their bodies. It was throwing its head back and swallowing the sheep whole, like a lizard would swallow a fly. He was watching this and witnessing this on his homesite lease out there. Now, rumor has it, University of New Mexico shows up, and they said, we're going to cast some of these fossilized prints that are on your property. We've got Subway sandwiches, and you can have some Perrier and so forth, and blah, blah, blah. And he says, well, why do you want to cast those old prints? I get fresh ones down in the wash. And they took them down into the wash. And down in the wash were these huge, huge, fresh footprints, almost identical to what they were going to cast in the rocks. And in the end, what did they end up casting? The fossilized footprints. That's what they got paid to go and do.
So they weren't interested in current history. They were interested in ancient.
I think they were. I think they were probably enthralled by it.
All right, we have to take a break, and we will have to step away from the mics here for a couple of minutes. We'll be back, folks, with J.C. Johnson and more fascinating information from the Four Corners area. Welcome back. My guest this evening is J.C. Johnson. And J.C., when we stepped away for break, you had just told us about the university coming out, and they were not really interested in getting any plaster casts of the, or at least they didn't take plaster casts of the current tracks, but they did of the fossilized tracks. And you were about to say you think maybe they were interested, but, you know, they were just following orders. We can't hear you. No, we can't hear you at all. I'm sorry, we cannot hear you. You are thousands of miles away from your phone, it sounds like. Okay, what we're going to have to do is we're going to hang up and we're going to call you back and see if we get a better connection. I don't know what happened to you. All right, we'll try that, folks. And this sort of thing does happen sometimes, you know, there you go. What can I say? It's live radio, and things happen in live radio, don't they? All right, let's see if we get J.C. back with us.
In order to complete this call...
All right, we will try it again. All right, well, dial it in manually, and see what happens. I wish those kind of things didn't happen, but they do. Are you with us, J.C.? Ah, it's ringing. Now we can hear you. So what was the deal with the university? They didn't take any plaster casts at all of the current footprints of this dinosaur?
No, sir. Not in.
Okay. Tell you what, reach around there and turn your volume down. We can hear the show on delay behind you. So let's get that done, and then we'll proceed.
Okay.
All right. Now, this guy says that he saw the thing attack his sheep, and it didn't rip and tear them apart. It just tilted its head back and swallowed the sheep whole, like a lizard swallows a small animal.
Yes, sir.
All right. Now, that's one sighting report. Have there been others, and have you seen it?
I'll have to go into that story, and it's a story.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. My son, he's a ranger sniper in Iraq, was home on leave. He spent some time with me in December of last year. I took him out to Skinwalker Canyon, or actually Skinwalker Wash. And the wind was blowing like 60, 70 mile an hour gust. It was just incredible that day. And we were trying to, you know, get some father and son pictures and so forth. And I said, you know, if we drop down in this canyon, we'll probably get less wind. And we somewhat sort of did. Some of the corners had incredible wind. And there was a rock face that dropped off. And I told him, let's jump behind this rock face and have a cigarette there and relax and get out of the wind. The wind was just beating us up. And when we were done smoking, I said, when we jump out from this rock face, if something has been following us, it's going to expose itself. Even though it knows we're behind this rock face, it's going to jump out and expose itself and be there when you jump out from behind this rock face. And I gave him an area to look at, and I took an area for myself.
Now, did you suspect that? Did you suspect that something had been following you?
I'm looking at this thing, and he was trying to get a binocular up on it, and it moved away. And what he saw was something in the 12 to 14 foot variety of a Komodo dragon, low to the ground, out on the Navajo Reservation near the Four Corners, out in Arizona, New Mexico, northern.
All right, now did you suspect when you were down behind the rock, did you for some reason suspect that there was something that had been following you?
I had a gut something was following us, and I think my son, with all my travels and everything I've done, was expecting a big hairy monster. Roar! He was not expecting what he saw.
Mm-hmm.
What he saw was a lizard-type variety go down the side of this hill and climb up on the red rocks. He was not expecting that. And he's a sniper. He has to identify his target in, you know, milliseconds. And he was taken aback by this. You know, I don't think he was expecting a lizard.
But, okay, now, have you seen this creature before?
I've only seen the tracks.
Mm-hmm.
And I've only come up and investigated the witnesses who have talked about these creatures. Them, they, there are many. From
now,
Laguna, Pueblo, all the way to the Hopis, to the Navajo. I mean, this is something that is going on with them presently. It's not one isolated creature. This is something that is prevalent throughout all of these peoples and cultures.
All right, now Chief Dan mentioned that there was a dinosaur type creature that was just slightly larger than a chicken.
Yeah. It's like a, it's like an emu with scales, I guess. That's the best we've had described to us.
Mm-hmm.
Like an emu with scales.
And how tall is that creature?
Probably 3 to 4 feet tall.
Oh, it's quite a bit larger than a chicken.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the prints that we get, it's a lot larger than a chicken.
Mm-hmm. And the reports that you've had of this, do they say that it's vicious? Does it attack their animals? What do they say about it?
Well, we've got different things. The emu type thing we're still looking into, and I couldn't tell you that we have any reports of attacks on livestock or people. The river dino proper, and we call them river dinos because we've got white people, we've got all different classes of people talking about these creatures.
Mm-hmm.
And they are pretty vicious.
Okay, and what do they look like according to the reports?
A mini T-Rex.
Okay. So that's the one that you were talking about that you have the footprints and
No, I would think what we have the footprints of is probably more along the lines of our witness from Newcomb, New Mexico. This is a creature that typically walks on two legs, that drops down on four legs, and is twice as long as a pickup truck.
All right, now, how often are you hearing these reports?
These are sporadically, and typically our main focus is on the hairy hominids, Bigfoot.
Mm-hmm.
That's our main focus. But in between, we get all these different reports.
All right, let's talk about the hairy hominids or the Sasquatch in Arizona, because that doesn't get a lot of airplay like the Sasquatch in the Northwest, in the forests of the Northwest and mountains of the Northwest. How frequent is Bigfoot seen in Arizona?
You know, just from the reports I get, quite often.
Why do you think it's not getting the attention and the airplay that the ones in the Northwest get?
You know, you've got Dr. Jeffrey Meldrum, and he's working basically out of Pocatello, Idaho.
Mm-hmm.
The assistant professor in whatever he's doing. You know, the blackout happens when, you know, you'll get sporadic reports, especially out of Arizona. The hot spots are during the summer, Mogollon Rim, Apache, White Mountain Reservation, and then during the winter, you're going to have stuff around Apache Lake and so forth.
Now, have you yourself ever seen one of these Sasquatch?
I've seen about a dozen.
That's quite a number.
Yes, sir.
How tall are they?
Between 8 and I, you know, the thing is, when I become unconventional, I've seen things 16 feet plus. I have pictures of things in the 16-foot plus variety.
Okay, and when you say things, you're talking about Sasquatch-type hairy hominid creatures?
Hairy hominids. I'm not saying Bigfoot.
Mm-hmm.
Bigfoot is a romanticism of the Patterson-Gimlin film. Okay, what I'm seeing are different things. They're hairy hominids that walk on two
All right, now 16 feet, that's a big creature. How much would you figure this thing weighs?
Something that big, and I've always thought 100 feet per pound.
100 feet per pound? You mean 100 pounds per feet, per foot?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, so 1,600 pounds.
At least.
Mm-hmm.
At least.
Yeah, that's pretty big. That's pretty heavy. Now, you mentioned that in the basement of the Smithsonian, they have a floor beneath the ground there where they have all these skeletons that are 8 to 12 feet tall. And we've heard about these now over the years. Do you think there's a possibility that any of those skeletons are skeletons of these creatures, or do you think those skeletons are skeletons of giant humans?
And that's the thing, and we go from there. In the Mormon history, the Mormons came across the West, and they were digging up these burial mounds looking for shields and bucklers and swords and things like that. And what they were digging up was the burial mounds of 9 and 10 and 12 foot tall skeletons. They didn't find any shields or swords or bucklers, but they found plenty of skeletons on their way out from Missouri.
So what do you think? Are they human?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure. And what I've seen, I'm not sure what they are.
All right, we have to step away for a couple of minutes here for a break. We'll be back, folks, right after this. Welcome back. We're talking with J.C. Johnson, and he is a cryptid investigator, I guess is a good way to put it. He investigates reports of cryptids. Cryptids are biological life forms that aren't supposed to be. And so he's an investigator of those in the Four Corners area of the United States, primarily. And other places, but primarily in that area. JC, let's check and see if we still can hear you this time.
Check 1, 2.
Yeah, we can hear you fine. I don't know what happened last time. Okay, now, these very tall creatures, there are reports, and I'm sure you're familiar with this, there are reports that back around, the early 1900s, somewhere in the early 1900s, there was a guy that discovered the entrance to a cave in the Grand Canyon, and he went in this cave, and he said there were massive chambers. There was a statue. He said things looked sort of Egyptian. There was a statue. It's a big mystery. And then the next thing that happens is there are reports in the Arizona Gazette that the Smithsonian sent a team out there to excavate it, to go in and check it out. And they give the guy his name that was head of the team, and there were a couple of reports about all of the supplies they bought. They built a railway right out to the edge of the cliff where you go down to the cave. And then all of a sudden, after they worked for a while, they disappeared. The railway disappeared. And the Smithsonian today says this guy never worked for us, although in their own records are documents showing that he did. What do you know about that story, if anything?
The Grand Canyon is a very unusual, perplexing situation. We have Egyptian writings. We have all kinds of cool things going on there that when we read the newspaper reports, the Smithsonian is always going to send someone out to check this out and verify this. And when we find things that don't fit into history and even, my goodness, I won't go so far as to say world history, but when it doesn't fit, they shut it down. And the Smithsonian had billions of dollars to back them, anything they wanted to do, and they shut down so many projects. When it doesn't fit, they shut it down.
You know, one of the things that National Geographic, and they look, National Geographic does some marvelous work. But National Geographic also does some weird things. They go into a lot of places where there's some kind of a mystery like this, and they pay people that own the property. They buy the rights to the story and the photographs and so forth, and they pay these people. And then nobody else can go in and do any exploration. Nobody else can take photographs and publish them. It's their story. And then they sit on it. And so all over the world, there are, well, at least it has been reported on this show by other people, by explorers, that all over the world there are these sites that are closed because National Geographic owns the rights. And they're sitting on it. They're not doing anything with it.
I agree. And I would say in parts and ways and means with what the National Geographic has done in the Grand Canyon, they've sat on things. And they want a comfy, cozy, peaceable existence of mankind. That is not so. They, the timeline, once again, we go back to a timeline. And it becomes religion. If it does not fit into the timeline, we're not going to expose this. We're not going to show this.
Mm-hmm.
It does not fit.
Well, they're having a big problem these days, of course, with Neanderthal, because according to their timeline and their progression of the human race, Neanderthal is one of the ancestors of Homo sapiens. And, of course, we, they say, are Homo sapiens. All right, the problem has occurred with geneticists doing the human genome project, because they have discovered that the Neanderthals, while a type of human, are not in the in our gene pool. We don't share the same gene pool. We're not even cousins. They're a completely separate branch of human. And so that of course blew the Darwinist theory right out of the water. Now, it doesn't necessarily blow all evolutionary theories out of the water, but it blows the Darwin theory out of the water. And most of ancient history and most of paleontology and a lot of archaeology is based on Darwinian theory. And it follows the timeline that, you know, the Darwinian theory sets forth. Now, basically, I guess what I'm saying is Darwin is dead, Darwin's theory is dead, and yet you have these alleged scientists that are clinging to it, as you said, as if it were religion.
Truly, truly. And it comes to the philosophical, once again, philosophical science, philosophical paleontology, philosophical whatever. They're clinging to all these things as a religion. This is what they were taught. So the university that showed up and saw the fresh dino tracks versus the dino tracks that were archived in the rocks, they chose to cast the archived dino tracks and leave the fresh ones alone. They would not spearhead or mount up anything against philosophical paleontology. There's a timeline. And the thing is, the timeline is messed up because we still have some of these things out here. We have reports of giant pterodactyl-type creatures flying through the sky. We have reports of so many type dino entities that are huge that they will not accept that.
Now there,
bring something in, and I bring something in. And believe me, I would rather plug a bunch of rounds into a lizard than a Sasquatch or something of that nature. I would rather kill a lizard, which in my mind I believe is inferior to the intellect of a Sasquatch. I would rather kill this creature, which I'm probably wrong for doing that, but you know what? I'm going to bring something forward with God's help and the help of my crew. I'm going to bring something forward. Something. Whether it be a lizard, whether it be a giant bird, or whatever, I'm going to bring something forward.
Now, there are people that would, as you know, that would say, oh, no, you shouldn't kill it. You know, that's the wrong thing to do. But you know something? Now, folks, I want you to think about this. If JC goes out into the Navajo Nation, runs across this 16-foot-tall dinosaur, and takes a bunch of pictures of it, and brings us the pictures, I'm going to get calls all night from people saying they think the pictures are faked. But you can't say that if he can carve a steak off of the thing and serve it to you. All right, we'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. Let me remind you that this coming Saturday, we're going to be broadcasting the seminar that I did back in May. We captured it on videotape. That's what's on the DVD. We're going to broadcast that. It'll be closed circuit. That means you have to have a password in order to view it. All right. And it's $25. We'll show it three times during the 24-hour period, so you can choose whichever time suits your time zone best. And then you can watch all three if you want. But you have to get registered no later than midnight on the 24th. That means you've got 2 days left, all right? And the reason we're doing this, it was suggested to me by one of our members that we do this to assist in raising money for the show, so we'll be here next month, okay? But if you missed it when I did it live, don't miss it again. All right, we're talking with J.C. Johnson. J.C., we're going to open the phone lines here in a little bit, but let me ask you a question or two before we do that.
Sure.
In this area, this geographical area where you're involved in doing these investigations, there's also this thing about skinwalkers. I mean, this area of the United States seems to be the nexus of everything weird. It seems to be it's just got everything weird you can think of. You got dinosaurs there. You've got Sasquatch. You've got skinwalkers. And, of course, many UFO sightings. What's the deal with the skinwalkers? Incredible. I'm sorry?
Incredible.
Mm-hmm. Incredible. Well, what's the deal there with the skinwalkers? Now, Chief Dan talked to us about this, and he said that there are thousands of these skinwalkers.
He's right. He's right. And it's something inadvertently, I didn't want to take this on, but we went out to sighting after sighting after sighting where somebody said they saw something large, hairy, hominid, and we went out and investigated, and it was not Bigfoot. It was something else.
Okay, now how do you know it's not Bigfoot?
There's classic Bigfoot prints, and just from our photos, I'll send you classic Bigfoot prints. You could see classic Bigfoot prints. These prints were different. They were something else. And the stories that people were telling us were something else. If you have not seen Navajo Skinwalkers and Legends, it's available on our website at Untamed Dimensions. Check out. You'll just click on the Crypto Four Corners. You'll see.
Okay, so you've got in this on your website or in a DVD, you've got photographs of.
We've got Navajo Skinwalkers and Legends on DVD.
Mm-hmm. But in there, do you have photographs of these footprints?
To a point. Some of the footprints are held private. If someone wants to look at them, I'll send you a coded Crypto Four Corners from our archives. You can look at these footprints.
Where are they held private?
Because number one, we were trying to research Bigfoot.
Mm-hmm.
And we ran into the skinwalker genre years ago. And from that, we've got a catalog of different things. One of the people who is in Navajo Skinwalkers and Legends is here with me tonight. His name is Darren Weeks. He's you're Apache in Navajo? Ah, he's Sioux in Navajo.
Mm-hmm.
He shot a skinwalker.
And what happened after he shot the skinwalker? Did it die?
Days later, a medicine man died not far from this area due to heart complications.
And what did this skinwalker look like?
Tell you what, I'll put you on with Darren right now.
All right.
Hold on.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. Darren, tell our audience what this skinwalker looked like.
It was pretty large. I'd say about as tall as a stop sign. When I first encountered it, it was down on all fours. I thought it was a humongous giant dog. And when it stood up, it just towered over me.
Had you ever seen anything like this before?
Oh, no, never. I lived in California for 18 years and moved to the res and had never heard of it until I got there. And I thought, you know, to me, a skinwalker was somebody streaking across the road without any clothes on, you know. And this creature, whatever it was trying to get at my family. My wife at the time was visiting her uncle and called me up in a frantic voice telling me something was trying to get into the house. And I drove out there. It usually takes about anywhere from 20 to 30 minutes to get out there, and I was out there in about 15 minutes flat. And when I pulled up, I saw the hind end going around the house, and I was excited, and I went to jump out of my vehicle, and I forgot that the vehicle was still in drive, so I had to jump back in the vehicle, throw it in park, and when I ran around the house, I had my rifle with me, and as I leveled down the rifle, I was thinking, you know, Jesus, I don't know if this rifle is going to stop, you know, put this animal down. And when I went to level out the rifle, that's when it stood up on its hind legs. And the moon was lit up enough I could make out, like, painting on the face. And it looked like horns, but when I think about it, you know, now, it could have been skin overlapped, you know, and folded in such a way that it looked like horns. And I squeezed off the three rounds and hit it in the chest. At that time, it had rolled with the impact of the rounds impacting on the chest area around the heart area, you know, the area of the heart. And it spun around, bound like maybe two times, and cleared a barbed wire fence, and it looked like a shadow moving across the ground, but I never heard the connection of any kind of paws or anything on the ground. And, you know, in layman's terms, it hauled ass up the mountain close by the house.
How was it shaped? You said you thought at first that it was a big dog. Was it shaped like a dog?
Yeah, it had the body of like a four-legged animal, and then it stood up. The knees were backwards. I remember that because I saw the hind end go around the house as mm-hmm. it pulled in, and it looked all the way it was shaped. It looked almost like probably the. What they showed on The Howling, the werewolf standing up toward the end of the movie, it was like that.
What about the face now?
The face, it was painted up. It was semi-human, but still had a snout on it. What I mistook for horns could have been flaps of, you know, like a skin, like a mask, or like a headdress. And talking to her uncle later on, and the uncle is interviewed in our movie Skinwalkers, Myths and Legends.
Mm-hmm.
He spoke about the same creature. We weren't able to interview the children who lived next door at the time, but the children who lived next door to my family at the time said that they heard like a whispering outside their window. They couldn't make out what the words were. I think it was a dialect of Navajo, or possibly even ancient Navajo. And it kind of coincided with what happened that night, because they had looked out the window and they had seen a few shadows stretching across the farm that they have. And
okay, now you said you put three rounds center mass in its chest.
Yes, sir.
What caliber rifle is this?
I was using a .22 at the time. It was a mm-hmm. Ruger 10/22.
Mm-hmm.
I had it fixed up. I put the folding stock and a 30-round clip on it. And I used that to go out to this canyon, which some of the teenagers I hung out with at the time dubbed it Skinwalker Canyon. We used it to eradicate some of the wild dogs that were out there. They brought their .22s also, you know, which was perfect for, you know, going after the wild dogs at the time. And that was, at that time, that was the only weapon I had.
A .22, there are people who think that because that's such a small caliber and small bullet, that it's not all that dangerous. 22 is deadly. True enough, it doesn't knock you down like if you get hit with a 45, but 22 has a lot of characteristics that make it very, very effective, very deadly. Of course, if I'm going after something this big, I would prefer to have a larger caliber, but I mean, you had what you had at the time, and you put three rounds in its chest, and if that were human, it probably would have killed it on the spot.
Yeah. I joined the Corps later on, the Marine Corps, and started, you know, studying weapons, you know, as, you know, I progressed with the Corps.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was brought to realization that the M16A2 service rifle is nothing but a 22. It's got a lot of ass behind it, you know. I do apologize for the language, but, you know, that's just how we were told the M16A2 was.
And it's it's been in service for some time.
Since
now,
the 60s.
Have you ever seen any other skinwalkers other than this one?
Yes. One of our team members and I, Wesley Chapman and I, we were up in the what the teenagers dubbed Skinwalker Canyon. We had heard a few things going on out there here recently, and Wesley and I went out there, and we heard a whispering, and we could make out the word cove. That was all we could make out. A lot of it was a Navajo dialect, and as we rounded a bend on top of this canyon by a rock formation, it looked like a giant fox. It looked like it had been standing on its hind legs, dropped down as we bent, went around the bend, and proceeded to take off. I had my AR-15 at the time,
mm-hmm.
and with the training from the Marine Corps, you know, I could shoot moving objects. You know, they trained us to do that in there. And I put two rounds into it, and Wes was probably about maybe 20 yards behind me. We did a 90-degree turn to our left-hand side and proceeded to go up following this creature. We did not find any blood stains, no paw prints, nothing, but we both saw it. And later on, we had acquired footage from somebody who we've been working with, who's had some phenomena going on around their farm. One of the video clips that they were able to obtain showed something close to what Wes and I had pursued that day. It bounds off from the left-hand side of the screen. It takes, I think it's two bounds, and then it goes straight up. It's incredible footage. I can let you talk to JC more about that. He's pretty much our team leader.
Well, I will, but I have a few more questions I want to ask you.
Okay.
All right, now, we've heard from Chief Dan, we've heard from JC, that there are thousands of these skinwalkers in the Navajo Nation. Why?
A lot of it is... Okay, from talking to some of the people around here, some of the people I work with, the power of skinwalking was given to the Navajos as a way to transfer information, especially during the Indian Wars. And it was supposed to be a blessing, but some of the Navajos had perverted it into what they use now, and a lot of it is through jealousy and spite because of somebody prospering when another will sit there and look at it and believe that their you know, the person's prosperity should be theirs.
Mm-hmm.
And they incorporate using medicine men for good or bad purposes. You know, as long as the medicine man gets paid, he's going to do, you know, what he is paid to do. Okay? And being away from the, you know, living in California for 18 years, and when I first got back here, I was treated as an outsider.
Mm-hmm.
They would call me an apple, red on the outside, but white on the inside. There's a bit of racism still. But I was slowly welcomed into the fold of friends that I had at the time. And through my friendships with them, they had revealed some of these things to me. Skinwalker Canyon was named so because of the activity going on out there. Some friends of mine and I had my 357 with me, and we went out there planking, you know, shooting at targets, just cliff climbing, you know, doing a little bit of rappelling. And the day got pretty long. We didn't realize what time it was. And my first encounter with anything like that was out there at that canyon. I had a flashlight with me because we do a little bit of exploring with the caves and everything out there. You know, we didn't know about carbon monoxide or anything like that. None of the gases that could be in the caves.
Mm-hmm.
And it started getting dark. Sun was setting, and I let one of my friends take lead. You know, he took point. He thought he knew the way back, and he ended up getting us lost on the west side of the east side of the canyon. And by that time, it started getting dark, and we heard something paralleling us, trying to manipulate its footsteps with ours. And I told the two guys I was with, you know, on the count of three, we're going to get in step, and on the count of three, we're going to stop, because I'm hearing something. And by the count of three, we had stopped. Well, whatever was paralleling us did not expect that, and we heard the crunch.
Mm-hmm.
And it was probably about, I would say, maybe 10 or 15 yards from where we were. I whipped out the flashlight, and I had fresh batteries in there, and for some reason, the flashlight wouldn't work. And we were out there crapping our pants. I had one cylinder full of rounds, and I was prepared to use it, but I couldn't see exactly where it was from us. And we were in a position on the edge of the canyon where it was either we go back the way we came and run into this thing, or we're going to have to find another route. We came across a kind of a sheer edge that went up. It was about maybe 10 or 12 feet tall, and the two companions I was with, Mike and Lorenzo, they were able to help me shimmy up the wall. I dropped my belt down, and Mike was a little bit bigger than me, muscle-wise. And Lorenzo, he was the size of a linebacker, and it would take me and Mike to help him up. Mike got up there, we dropped both of our belts down to Lorenzo, and to hear Lorenzo scared, it put the fear of God into us. We could hear it moving closer to where Lorenzo was located, down below us. We helped Lorenzo, we got up, we started running. We made our way toward the beginning of the canyon by the highway, and as we got inside the canyon, we took shelter in there. We figured, you know, there was only three ways into that cave, and I hit the lighter because I smoked at the time, and we came across torches and a ball of clothes that were all tied up. It was unnerving. And, you know, Mike, the guy that was with us, was like, "You really are skinwalkers, you know." And Yeah, I was only 18 at the time. Mike was probably 16 or 17, and Lorenzo was probably about the same age as me. And we, you know, to put it in layman's terms, we hauled ass from the face of that that cave all the way to where the highway was, which was probably about maybe a third of a mile. And we had gotten back. I talked to another buddy of mine, and we were shaking. And we told him what we came across. And suddenly, all the dogs in the neighborhood started barking, and we saw a group of them chasing after a shadow up by this housing project. And I leveled my pistol. It was close enough I could hit it. And when I pulled the trigger, it clicked. And when I opened up the cylinder, there was no rounds in my my 357. And I was a little freaked out. I talked to my buddy later on, but at that night he jerked me. He actually reached out of his window, jerked me into the room, and he started telling me, you know, that they had the power to do this. And I was, you know, like I said, being from California, I believe in science. You know, there has to be answers for everything. I could not account, because I never opened my cylinder, as, you know, I couldn't account for where the rounds went.
Mm-hmm.
And my buddy tells me that you have to put ashes on whatever weapon you're using to be able to engage it. The creature I ran into a couple of years later, the one that I shot, I don't think it expected any kind of intervention at all, and I think that's why the weapon worked.
All right, we have to take a break. When we come back, folks, we'll open the phone lines, and if you got questions or comments, we'll take your calls. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're going to open up the phone line so that you can call if you have a question or comment for JC. Who have I got on the phone now? Is this JC or?
This is JC.
Okay. What was the young man's name that I was just speaking with?
John Weeks.
John.
Actually, he's not a young man. He served in the Gulf War.
Mm-hmm.
He served in another war.
I bet he's younger than me.
Right. By God's blessing, he's home here with us now. So,
okay. Folks, if you have a question or a comment for JC or for John, the telephone number is 623-444-5889. And if you need to call me toll-free, we have a toll-free number. It is 888-223-4599. The lines are open. We'll take your calls. And it's interesting because I've been watching the lights flicker as people were calling in before I opened the phone lines. Now it's absolutely calm. So if you you want to take a shot at getting in, now's a good time. If you are outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, you don't want to make an international long-distance call, you can send me a flash message, and you do that by going to my website, kevinsmithshow.com, and you just click, you scroll down, you'll see the link that says flash message, and you click that and send me a message. If you're in Canada, you're in the USA, please use the phone numbers, and don't tell me, well, I can't afford to call. I pay for the call, okay? 888-223-4599 is the toll-free number. The regular number, 623-444-5889, accessible throughout planet Earth. JC, this was an amazing story John told us about these skinwalkers, and I want to, and it coincides with much of what we heard from Chief Dan and from you on the previous show. But I want to ask you a question here. Why are there thousands of them?
I tell you, the evil is spreading, and every aspect of evil that is out there now is spreading. Things are coming to a close, and I'm not going to give you dates or anomalies or provisions for dates. I'm just telling you, things are winding down, and the Lord is wrapping things up here, and we're all going to be held in accordance to what we've done, all of us, and things are wrapping up now.
All right, now, are all skinwalkers evil?
Yes, sir, they are. There is no ifs, ands, or buts. Everything that takes a human shape, that turns into an animal shape, does evil, is evil. Leonard Dan will attest to the fact.
What do they do? I mean, do they kill people? Do they what do skinwalkers do?
Kevin, if you wanted to become a skinwalker, they would say you need to kill someone near and dear to you. Then you bring the body in. And once you bring the body in, they're going to have necrophilia, nasty things going on with it. After they have sex with the corpse you brought in, they're going to drag out the liver, the pancreas, the different organs, and they're going to make potions out of them. But before they do that, they're going to roast and toast some of the body that you brought in, and they're going to eat it.
And the purpose of all of this is so that the person can that brought the body in can become a skinwalker.
No, the purpose of all this is the unknowing sequential person who brought the body in becomes a servant of Satan.
Okay, now, see, that's curious to me because I would have thought that Satan doesn't exist in Navajo religion.
He does now. And what has happened years ago, however the practice was, Skinwalker used to serve the Diné, the Navajo. He would go off outside of the camp and listen to the plans of the Spaniards. And he would come back and tell the Navajo, these are the plans of the Spaniards. Or he would go off and listen to the plans of the Calvary. And they would come back and say, these are the plans of the Calvary. What has happened is, and I'm not agreeing with any of this, but I'm saying for what God allowed, there became a bastardization of this art. And that's what we're dealing with now.
Okay. So after they do all of this gruesome stuff, and the guy becomes a skinwalker, what do skinwalkers do as skinwalkers?
Typically, presently, they go out and curse their neighbors, they curse their brethren, they curse people who typically would probably resist something like this. And I'm for the ones who resist. That's who I help. That's who I support.
Okay, now with thousands of these things living around you, aren't you a little bit nervous? I mean, you obviously would have a target on you.
I tell you what, I look forward to any confrontation with one of these entities. I look forward to it.
All right, let's take this telephone call, and caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, please, and from where are you calling?
Good evening, gentlemen. It's Terry from Ohio.
Terry, before I let you get into what you want to say, send me an email with your telephone number in it, please.
Okay.
Okay. I there's something I need to talk with you about. Okay, go ahead, Terry.
Yeah. Where you at? I hear you's down to one line. That thing I sent you didn't help.
The computer that runs it went down during the show last night, so we're on a spare computer tonight.
Yeah, I thought you said you was down to one line or something.
Well, I was, because the computer that runs it went down.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I'll send it to you. My question is, for like the movie Skinwalkers, it was more like aliens taking on human form, or like reptilians taking on human form. I always took skinwalkers as something that isn't is taking on human form, that isn't human, not a human that can transform into something else. Or am I just mincing words?
The movie Skinwalkers, I've never seen it. It was a disappointment for everyone.
We can barely hear you, JC.
For sure. The movie Skinwalkers was a disappointment for everyone involved. Not the directors and the producers, but the people who saw this afterwards. What happens when you are a human flesh and you decide to take on this evil oddity, you become something else. And when you become something else, you are not human.
Well, it could also work the other way, too, couldn't it? A non-human extraterrestrial taking on a human form, that would be skinwalking, too, wouldn't it?
I agree. I agree.
Okay, Terry, did you have another question or comment?
No, it just, that's just, the way I understood it. You couldn't be a skinwalker if you're a human.
Jay, where are you from?
His name's Terry.
Yeah, Ohio.
Oh, Terry. Sorry.
And he's from Ohio.
Ohio. Okay. God bless you, man.
Yep.
All right, Terry. Thanks for the call. 623-444-5889 and toll free at 888-223-4599. There is a place in the Navajo Nation that you and John have both talked about, Chief Dan talked about, Skinwalker Canyon. There is a place in Nevada referred to as Skinwalker Ranch. Is Skinwalker Ranch, because the Navajo Nation, I think, extends across the border, across the state line into Nevada a little bit, is Skinwalker Ranch still on the Navajo Nation?
Somewhat, but what's going on up there, and people like Joe Fax, the dude is incredible, and the people who are involved in the research up there, these guys had like a carte blanche situation where whatever it cost, pay for it, do it. If anyone has never read the book Hunt the Skinwalker, read it. Start there. And then you'll begin to understand plausibly and politely, smallly, what we're dealing with out here. Read that first. Hunt the Skinwalker. It's a great book.
All right, now...
Look it up online.
All right, I'm still a little bit curious about what it is that would make someone want to become a skinwalker. Are they promised some kind of power? Do they have superhuman powers? What is the attraction?
I think it's all about power, especially on the reservation. And the guy that started doing some skinwalker exposés years ago, we can't find him now. And he's got some excellent stuff out. Not exactly footage or anything else. He was someone who made claim to the skinwalker genre.
Okay, and he went missing, huh?
Yes, he is. He is missing. He is missing.
How do you keep from going missing?
My crew, my God, my belief.
Well, surely there would be some other people who are Christian that skinwalkers have attacked successfully.
You know, actually, I don't think so.
I really
don't. Yes, I don't think so.
All right, now...
my attack started yesterday, and I've got some suffering, and I'm still here talking to you now.
You came under attack by a skinwalker yesterday?
Yes, sir.
Tell us about that.
No, it's probably not something I want to talk about. But I am telling you, I have come under attack in the last 24 hours because of this show.
I'm a little stunned by that, but we'll pick up there when we come back. We have to step away for a break. We'll be back, folks, right after this. That's the number to call. We're on final approach. That means we only have a few minutes left in tonight's show. Don't forget that we, this Saturday, will be showing the Gods in the Garden seminar. It's not live. It was recorded live back in May. But we're going to show that. There will be three showings on the 24-hour period of Saturday. And you can choose whichever viewing fits you, all right? But you have to register in order to be in on that. Everyone that registers will receive an email with the password and the link. And it takes that to be able to watch it, okay? It's only $25. All right, we're talking with J.C. Johnson. We're talking about a phenomenon that several, actually, inhabit the area of the Four Corners area of the United States. And most recently, we've been talking about these skinwalkers. JC, let me ask you this. I ask if skinwalkers have some kind of special powers. It would seem to me that they must, because John talked about putting three rounds in the chest of one of these skinwalkers, and it just ran away, and you know, as if it were not injured, bounded over a fence and ran away.
It died 3 days later.
Okay. How do you know for sure that was the skinwalker?
We don't, and that's rumor, and once again, it's just rumor.
Mm-hmm.
But once again, 3 days later, medicine died. And I'll go back almost 20 years about good medicine, and there used to be good medicine with the Diné, the Navajo, and now there is not good medicine. The last good medicine man was thrown out of the back of a pickup truck in 1997 and died with a broken neck. Good medicine is hard to be found on this structure out here that we call the reservation.
All right, now, are you Native American as well?
No, sir. I am, through my brothers and my sisters, I am as they are. As I share their afflictions, I share who they are. And I tell you that the good medicine is gone. Is gone. I'm going to help bring the good medicine back.
Okay, so there's...
God help me.
So are the... How many people live on the reservation?
Probably 600,000 people.
All right, now, Chief Dan told us there were about 4,000 skinwalkers.
Yes, sir.
All right, now, with 4,000 skinwalkers roaming around 600,000 people, it would seem that there would be a lot of fear among the 600,000.
And, you know, any society that is ruled by fear is called slavery.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir. Any institution that is ruled by fear is called slavery. I'm going to tell you that this organization does not approve of slavery.
Okay, but the question is there a lot of fear among the 600,000?
Yes, sir, there is. Those who don't know the whole truth. And the whole truth comes from the originator of this planet Earth.
Okay, but now the 600,000 who are afraid of the skinwalkers, do they not realize there are more of them than there are skinwalkers?
I think I heard Glenn Beck say something to that effect about a week ago. God bless you, Glenn Beck.
All right, but
yes, they do.
Okay, now if there's more of them than there are skinwalkers, all it would take would be for them to learn how to fight these skinwalkers and go after them.
We're working on that, sir.
Okay, so that's part of what you're doing.
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. Now, on the Navajo Reservation, as with all Native American reservations in the United States, I guess all, certainly virtually all of them, there is a governmental structure. You have a president of the Navajo Nation. You have a vice president. You have courts. You have police, and they're all reservation entities, agencies.
Yes, sir.
Okay. How do the Navajo police respond to reports of skinwalkers?
Let me ask you this. You trained some of them.
Yeah.
How do they respond to something of this variety?
Well, we didn't talk about that. We didn't talk about that skinwalkers or any of this phenomena. We just did police training, but not applied to specific cases. So I don't know. I do know that one of the people I trained was 7 feet tall.
Let me ask you this. The Yonah Blue Shoes, everything else, did you break through the barrier of the superstition to train these people?
Superstition didn't come up. We just did police training.
Okay.
Okay. So, I don't know. That's why I'm asking you the question. You live there. How do they respond to these reports of skinwalkers?
They file them, they bury them, they put them away.
Are there any skinwalkers that have infiltrated into the agencies of the Navajo Nation government?
The thing is, I can't see that because what they're doing is so destructive. They cannot have any kind of social bearing.
Mm-hmm.
They cannot have that.
Yeah.
They will destruct themselves. They cannot have that. And to a plus, I'm seeing that. But as Leonard brought up, Al-Qaeda, and I'm telling you, they are recruiting these people so they can become invisible and go into government installations.
How do you know that?
Leonard knows.
Okay, well, you know, he told us, and I'm not saying that it's not true, but I think we need to nail down how he knows that's going on.
Okay, and I tell you,
I wish we had more time. We don't. The closing music has taken over. Just stay on the line with me for a moment, JC. There you go, folks. That's a wrap for this evening. I hope you enjoyed it. Hope you rested your fingers from not calling. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. And you can call me whatever you want, and probably will now. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.